Good afternoon. I call this House Judiciary Committee meeting to order. Today is Monday, March 18th, 2024. It is 4:46 p.m. We are meeting in the Max Grimberg Committee Room 120 in the Capitol Building here in Juneau. The staff assisting us today is Shelby with the Juneau LIO and Sophia with House Records. Today we have present Representative Johnson, Representative Carpenter, Vice Chair Allard, and myself, Chair Vance. We have a quorum to do business. We have three items on today's calendar, Lord willing, and that is to hear House Joint Resolution 13 calling the Federal Constitutional Convention term limits in its first hearing, and then bring back House Bill 279 Admin Regulation Review Division in its second hearing, and then bring back House Bill 254 Prohibit Pornography to Minors. First on our agenda item today, we will hear HJR 13 by Representative McKay. I'd like to welcome you and your staff to the table. If you could please state your names for the record and begin walking us through your resolution.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is Representative Tom McKay from District 15, and I'm here to present House Joint Resolution 13, and I'd like to, this relates to federal term limits, and I'll read my sponsor statement if that's okay with you.
Please continue.
All right. Americans continue to raise concerns about a disconnection by Washington, D.C. politicians who have become less responsive to the evolving needs and concerns of their constituents. By polling data, 84% of Alaskans support having term limits for members of Congress. The power of incumbency is clear, with members of Congress raising an average of five times as much money as their challengers and winning re-election 94% of the time. Enacting term limits is a highly popular policy and is essential to encourage fresh perspectives in government, address the developing challenges of our country, and curb the ever-growing power of Congress. HJR 13 utilizes Article 5 of the United States Constitution and calls for a convention of the states to amend the Constitution by setting term limits on members of Congress in both the United States House of Representatives and the United States Senate. This resolution also calls for legislatures of the other 49 states to join in calling Congress for a convention of the states. I urge my fellow colleagues of the 33rd Legislature to support this legislation and help enact term limits on members of Congress. Thank you, Madam Chair.
For the record, as Laura does to staff Representative McKay, I'll be go ahead and presenting HJR 13, Federal Term Limits. So first of all, thank you, Chair Vance and the rest of the House Judiciary Committee members for being here today to hear this presentation on House Joint 13, which calls for resolution of the states to set federal term limits. Article 5 of the Constitution states that two-thirds of Congress or two-thirds of the states can call for a convention of the states to propose an amendment to the Constitution. This resolution represents Alaska's call for a convention to address congressional term limits and calls upon the states to do so as well. Currently, there are six states that have passed resolutions. These states are Florida, Alabama, Missouri, West Virginia, Oklahoma, and Wisconsin. So a convention of the states under Article 5 is a convention called to specifically propose amendments to the Constitution and differs from a constitutional convention, which typically implies the drafting of an entirely new constitution. If a call for a convention of the states were to pass, the state legislature would develop their own selection process for choosing their delegates. Once the convention of the states was held and an amendment proposed, then three-fourths of the states would need to ratify the amendments to become part of the U.S. Constitution. It is important to note that Article 5 limits a convention of the states specifically to amendments and does not grant the convention authority to alter the Constitution. So why do we need term limits? Incumbents in the U.S. Congress typically raise five times more money than their challengers and have an approximately 95% re-election rate. Incumbents having a high success rate often results in uncompetitive races and deter serious challengers. Newcomers in races tend to lack established support, basis, name recognition, and the finances needed to take on an incumbent. Introducing new members from diverse backgrounds into Congress is essential for bringing fresh perspectives and innovative approaches to governance. For instance, teachers could bring their practical insights and experiences from the classroom into education policy, or doctors who could bring valuable knowledge on the way healthcare services are designed, funded, and executed based on their own experiences in the medical field. So under the current system, it can take about 20 years in office to even get close to a committee chair. Committee chairs typically being the most senior members in Congress. This is more disfranchising for everyday Americans who would like to get involved in public service. And term limits would give more people with real-world experience the chance to serve and make an impact in the country. So term limits that are currently on the federal level. So up until the 31st president, previous presidents had voluntarily stepped down after serving two terms due to the precedent set by George Washington. It wasn't until Franklin D. Roosevelt's fourth term loomed that a handful of states passed resolutions for presidential term limits. So although two-thirds of the states did not pass resolutions for a convention of the states to occur, the state's pressure helped push Congress to act. On March 21, 1947, Congress proposed a resolution calling for a presidential term limit of two terms, which was then sent to the states for ratification and ratified on February 27, 1951, when Minnesota became the 36th state to approve the proposed constitutional amendment. The founders included Article 5 because they understood that Congress would be unwilling to give attention to the issues faced by the people, particularly if those issues involved restrictions on the federal government's own power. So, current active calls in Alaska, Article 5 calls survive until they are rescinded, or unless they are passed with an expiration date. So, under the current constitutions of both the United States and Alaska, if a legislature wishes to bind a future legislature, they may do so only by constitutional amendment. Otherwise, so long as an act can be subsequently amended or repealed, it is not considered binding on future legislators. Therefore, a future legislature has the ability to rescind a resolution calling for a convention to amend the Constitution. So there are currently three active calls in Alaska for a constitutional convention under Article 5. These calls are HJR 17, which calls for a balanced budget amendment, and this passed in 1982. We have HJR 22 calling for a federal constitutional convention, which was passed in 2014. And then we have committee substitute HJR 14, which calls for a countermand amendment, and this was passed in 2016. So the state legislatures and Supreme Courts would provide the necessary checks and balances against the convention if a convention were to occur and if it overstepped its primary purpose. As mentioned earlier in the presentation, the proposed amendment would need to be ratified by three-fourths of the state before it can be enacted. Therefore, the number of states, which is 38, needed to ratify the amendment would also serve as a checks and balances. Okay, so slide six, this is a slide that is a shortened version of the Alaska term limits poll that you have in front of you. This was conducted by RMG Research on Alaskans in January of this year. So it shows that 84% of Alaskans support term limits on members of Congress. By looking at the poll, we can see that support for federal term limits is highly favored across all demographic and political groups. We have 60% strongly approving and 30% strongly disapproving. There are also 76% of Alaskan voters that are in favor of Alaska calling for a convention of the states to propose an amendment regarding federal term limits. This poll is on the second page of the Alaska Term Limits Executive Summary that you have in front of you as well. And so the high percentage of Alaskans that are in favor speaks to the voters' desires for federal term limits. So in closing, term limits would encourage an influx of fresh talent and ideas reflecting the diverse and changing demographics of the American populace. It would promote more diversity of ideas, ensure regular renewal of leadership, and help maintain a government that is more aligned with the needs and wishes of its citizens. This change is not just about preventing overconsolidation of power, but about preserving the vibrancy and effectiveness of our democratic system. Thank you, Chair Vance, and the rest of the House Judiciary Committee members.
Thank you for that presentation. Does that conclude your remarks before we invited testimony?
Correct.
Thank you. So first, we will hear from Mr. Courard, the regional director for the group U.S. Term Limits, if you would please come to the table, place your name on the record. You will have 5 minutes to provide your testimony.
Here, where are you on?
Right there is fine.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. Constantine Courard, I am the regional director for U.S. Term Limits. Sort of on behalf of the sort of thousands of Arizonans, Alaskans, I'm from Arizona, on behalf of the Alaskans that have kind of signed our petitions, gone to the website, joined the call, and support this effort, I really want to thank you all for hearing the resolution, of course, to Representative McKay and his staff for their presentation. U.S. Term Limits is the nation's kind of oldest and largest advocacy group for congressional term limits. And as I've mentioned, and I know I've had meetings with some of you, there aren't an awful lot of issues where you can get Donald Trump and Barack Obama and Ron DeSantis and Beto O'Rourke to agree. But term limits happens to be one. And as you see from the polling, this is something that cuts really across every single racial, age, gender, education level, partisan background. The one thing everybody seems to agree on is term limits for Congress. They've done a really good job of sort of explaining the need. I think congressional dysfunction is well enough understood that I don't want to spend a lot of time for you because you guys have had sort of a long day already getting here. So I'm not going to dwell so much on the need for it. I think that's understood. I just want to kind of focus on 2 points. The first is that if you agree on congressional term limits, this is the only way to get it. There's only one path forward. Originally, the states on a state-by-state basis had tried to pass them. The Supreme Court struck that down and said you must amend the United States Constitution, okay, which is an Article 5 process. Congress will propose the amendment. You all will get to ratify it. Problem is that because this cuts against Congress's natural interests, Congress won't do this until you make Congress do this. And so that's why this is the only path here. So if you want congressional term limits, this is the only way. There is no other better way. The second point is this, that while the presentation out of necessity focuses on the Article 5 amendment process, the convention, the rules governing a convention, all that, that's where a lot of folks kind of get spun up real tight. If you have convention of concerns, the good news is we're never having a convention, not just on this, but really on anything. You've had this Constitution for almost 240 years, and you've never had an amendment convention. The reason is because Congress won't let you. It's sort of the people's pressure release valve. When the states put enough pressure on Congress, Congress acts, it preempts, it steps in, and it does it for us. The Bill of Rights that's on the wall here is the results of the states insisting that, hey, appreciate the Constitution, but the work's not done yet. And that's where Madison goes back and starts working on sorting through state calls and state, basically Article 5 efforts to produce the Bill of Rights, those 10 amendments. So if you have anything on the wall that you're particularly fond of, that's the Article 5 process at work. Presidential term limits was mentioned. The woman's right to vote was Article 5 pressure. The direct election of senators, because the Senate was not going to change its own rules, required state pressure. So while there's a lot of noise around a convention, we have a 240-year unblemished, undefeated track record of if the states insist, Congress will act. But they won't act unless you insist. So I know they said something about 5 minutes. I want to stop there just because, again, I know you guys had a really long day. If you have any questions on the issue, the process, whatever, obviously I'm available and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Before I continue, I want to let the record reflect that we were joined by Representative Gray at 4:48 and Representative Groh at 4:54. Do any members have any questions? All right. Thank you so much for your testimony.
Thank you, ma'am.
I believe for next invited testimony, we have Fritz Pettyjohn, a former Alaska legislator. If you could please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Hello, Madam Chairman. Thank you. Yeah, this is Fritz Pettyjohn. I served with Max Grunberg. You're working in the Max Grunberg room. Max and I served together on House Judiciary for 6 years, and he was a good man. I'm glad to see his name being honored the way it is. It was right about the time that I met Max that I became really aware that Article 5 was in the Constitution and how it would work. And it's designed, the framers specifically designed Article 5 because they realized there were certain items that Congress would refuse to propose amendments concerning any restriction on Congress itself, such as a term limits, they would never pass. So the only way to avoid that problem was to have an alternative method of amendment, proposing amendments, not ratifying, proposing amendments, and give that power to the state legislatures. And you, as legislators, are acting pursuant to your constitutional duty under Article 5 to act as a check on Congress, which is entirely dysfunctional and needs to be reformed in a variety of ways. Term limits is certainly one that has wide bipartisan support, and it would be a great improvement in Congress. And I think it's important to realize that, as Mr. Carrard so eloquently stated, there's never been a convention. There is unlikely to be ever be a convention, because Congress does not want to share the power that it has to propose amendments with the states, and therefore will react as it has in the past. If enough pressure is put, they will pass the amendment themselves. And that's what this entire term limits movement is about, forcing Congress to do what the people are demanding it to do. And there's been a lot of people. I've been involved in Article 5 for the last 40 years, and I've been traveled all over the country testifying to legislatures on various Article 5 resolutions, primarily fiscal reform, or also ballot budget amendment. I got involved in that in 1982 when the federal debt was $918 billion. It was considered outrageous at the time, congressional deficit spending, and we wanted to do something about it. Unfortunately, we failed, and now, of course, instead of having a debt of a little less than $1 trillion, it's $33 trillion. Obviously, Congress, as an institution, cannot function and needs to be reformed, and it's incapable of reforming itself. And that's what Article 5 is all about. That's what this resolution is all about. Any fear that you have about, well, what would happen if the convention somehow got out of control? I think these are absurd fantasies. And in any event, every amendment that has been ratified to the United States Constitution has had bipartisan support. Every one of these amendments. You can't get 38 states to ratify an amendment unless it has bipartisan support. You're familiar enough with the legislative process to know how difficult it is to get a three-fourths vote on anything. And getting three-fourths of the states to ratify anything is very, very difficult. It's only been done a handful of times in our history. So there's no real concern here about what might happen or what could happen. Nothing is going to be done which is not supported by both right and left, conservative, liberal, Democrat, Republican, however you want to dice it or slice it. And this is one of the very few subjects on which there is total bipartisan support. And on that basis, it's something that we can all be comfortable doing. So again, I, in my opinion, and I've said this to a number of different times, the fact that state legislatures are the ultimate repository of American liberty, because if everything goes to hell, frankly, the states are given the authority to step in and propose amendments to fix the Constitution as it's over the last 240 years. We need term limits. I think it's clear. And we're the last line of defense, state legislatures. You're given that authority by Congress, and if you have the power, you have the responsibility to use that power when it's called in the appropriate circumstances, and I think that's the situation we face now. Madam Chairman, thank you very much for your opportunity to testify before the committee. It's been a pleasure. And in Max Grunberg's room, it's entirely appropriate that you take up this subject today. Thank you again.
Thank you, former Member Pettyjohn, for your testimony today. Are there any more questions for the bill sponsor? Representative Gray.
Thank you, Chair Vance. If we could go back on the slide to the one that had the different HJRs. Yeah, that one. Sorry. Through the chair, what was HJR 22? It said it was going to be a convention, but what were they planning on doing at that convention?
For the record, Trevor Jepson, staff to Representative McKay. I believe Azabel, did you find the correct one? Yeah.
Okay. Through the chair, Representative Gray. So this HGR 22 was calling for a convention of the states to propose amendments to the Constitution, imposing fiscal restraints on the federal government, limiting the power and jurisdiction of the federal government, and limiting the terms of office of federal government officials, and urged the other 49 states to do so as well.
Thank you. I have a second question.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair, I want to ask this as respectfully as possible on the day that his portrait was unveiled in this building, but my question is about how to navigate this resolution as not being an anti-Don Young resolution.
Representative Gray, through the chair, I believe they would be discussing some type of grandfathering in for term limits, but this has nothing to do with being anti-Don Young. This is more pro-United States, pro what the American people want. The fact that it fell on this day is purely coincidental.
One last follow-up.
Follow-up.
I, through the chair to the sponsor, I did notice on line, page 2, line 23, that there will need to be an amendment because Kevin McCarthy is no longer the Speaker of the House of Representatives.
Representative Gray, through the chair, you are correct. There does need to be an amendment. Thank you for that.
With that being said, I will set an amendment deadline for tomorrow, Tuesday the 18th, by 5 p.m. to my office, and I look forward to that. For such corrections, and appreciate the oversight. That's why we do this. So thank you for the bill presentation. We will now set HGR 13 aside, and we'll now move on to House Bill 278. We will take a brief at ease to transition. For our second item on the agenda today, we'll bring back House Bill 278, Admin Regulation Review Division by the House Ways and Means, as presented by Representative Carpenter in its second hearing. And I'll first open public testimony for House Bill 278. And we do have Mr. Ed Martin online. If you would please state your name for the record, you have 2 minutes.
Yes, thank you. Chair Vance. I got to cut off my computer here. Yes, Chair Vance. My name is Ed Martin, Jr. I reside at 702 Lawton Street, Kenai, Alaska. You know, this whole thing comes back to bad memories. Bad memories when Mike Chenault was Speaker of the House. And when he led a charge to do away with a joint legislative committee to review regulations. And at that time, new regulations had come out, Chair, that had to do with the vote of the people to establish marijuana, recreational marijuana and regulations. I was concerned about the regulations and the makeup of that board at that time, of which one of the members didn't get approved until the regulations, folks, had already been approved by the legislature and became law. I would call that government by cabal, but that doesn't really lead to my real concern here. I think this may be a recreation, but called a division now instead of a committee of the legislature was at that time, and maybe somebody there can correct me, that it was two members of one from the majority and minority parties of the House and the Senate that were part of this regulation review committee that Mike Chenault told me, and I talked to him earlier today, that the reason he did away with it because they didn't have funding. Now, I'm glad to see this back. I don't know how it's going to function, and what I read in the bill doesn't say anything about the makeup of this division. If it's in the same scenario that was created and done away with and by the vote of the legislature, I would probably be all supportive of it. So I don't know what is going on here, but it doesn't, it's not clearly establishing in my mind, in reading the bill, the membership of this division.
Mr. Martin,
where it actually exists and how much it costs. So, in summation, I know I've gone over my time. Thank you very much, Chair Vance. I hope you'll discuss this. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And seeing no other testimony online, is there anyone in the room who would like to testify on House Bill 278? Seeing none, I will close public testimony. Let's see. We have received no amendments on this bill. Are there any further questions by the committee on House Bill 278? Seeing none, Representative Carpenter, would you like to provide any wrap-up comments before we consider a motion on this bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee, for hearing the bill. One of the things that we hear from our business community is the impact of regulations on the friendliness of business, the cost of doing business. And there isn't currently a real good, consistent mechanism to review regulations that get put on the books. When the committee that used to do it was done away with, it wasn't operating as well as maybe it could have in that regard. And so heading that direction was not the direction that I wanted to take. The direction that I wanted to take was to provide staff to the legislature with the duties of reviewing regulations and providing recommendations to the particular committees of jurisdiction that those regulations would fall under. And those full-time staff would be subject matter experts in regulatory reform or analysis of regulations and provide good recommendations to the legislators who would from year to year, from election cycle to election cycle, make up the membership of the committee. And therefore, there is continuity from election cycle to election cycle on what is being done with regard to regulatory review. It also would take it out of the purview of politics, which I think was part of some of the problem with the last design of the regulatory committee, was it would shift focus from election cycle to election cycle, depending on who was in control of the House at that time. So this is an attempt to put back as a policy the legislature's oversight of regulations and do so in a manner that provides consistency from year to year. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Carpenter. Do we have any closing comments from members? Hearing none. Vice Chair Allard, do I have
Thank
a motion?
You, Madam Chair. Oops, let me get this here. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that the House Judiciary Committee move HB 278, version 33 LS0894/B as in Bravo, from committee with the attached fiscal notes, and give legislative legal permission to make any technical and conforming changes as necessary.
Hearing no objection, House Bill 278, as amended, as not amended, has moved from committee. We will now take a brief at ease to sign the report. Back on the record for our third item and final item on the agenda today, we will bring back House Bill 254, Prohibit Pornography to Minors, by myself, the chair, in its third reading. And we have one amendment before the committee drafted by myself. Vice Chair Allard, may I have a motion?
I'm sure I move amendment number one.
Object for purposes of discussion.
If I could have Mr. Bob Ballinger, my senior policy advisor, to come and present amendment number one.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Bob Ballinger from Ripley Advance's office. This amendment, we actually visited about briefly the last time we talked. It is essentially bringing this into line with what the Texas bill had, where it provides for the AG's office to actually be able to enforce the civil provisions of this. We had originally taken this out of the bill because Texas's law was held up in court in Fifth Circuit. Since then, Fifth Circuit's come out and put it in place. They made it real clear that it is not likely that the lower court will prevail on this issue. And in fact, the Fifth Circuit, in their language, said not only did the Texas legislature have the right to put these restrictions in, but also had the obligation to. And so essentially what this does is not only do you have the ability to file a lawsuit for damages if you have a child who accesses the material pornography, if they do not have a age verification method consistent with the legislation, but then it also gives the opportunity for the AG's office to go out and seek civil action against any entities that are providing pornography and they don't have that reasonable age verification method. The penalties are set forth in the amendment, so it's $10,000 each day the commercial entity is in violation, and then additional civil penalty of not more than $250,000 if a result of the commercial entity's violation in this section, a minor accesses pornography and the entity publishes or distributes, and for full reasonable attorney's fees. So it gives opportunity for the AG's office to seek attorney's fees. And I'm happy to answer any questions on this amendment.
Any questions on amendment number one? Representative Gray.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. Through the chair, is there a fiscal note associated with enforcing these or no?
Madam Chair, to Representative Gray, this is Bob Ballinger from Representative Vance's office. The answer would be no. So there would be no obligation for the Attorney General to go out and enforce. And in fact, just like a lot of times attorney generals do go out and file civil actions, there's a decent chance that there'll actually be revenue that would come from it if they go out and enforce it against an entity that is not in compliance with the law.
Follow up.
In Virginia, through the chair, in Virginia, when they put their law in last year, there at the time that the law went into place, there were 65 porn sites. Major porn sites operating. One of the websites decided to comply with the law. 10 decided not to do business in Virginia anymore, and 54 continued to do business as usual. The reason why the 54 continued to do business as usual is because they are not based in the United States and they felt that there was no chance of them being held liable. How do we go after international sites like Pornhub based in Canada or, you know, internationally, how do we get them to pay?
So Representative Gray through the chair, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office, the answer is it depends on the entity, right? So if they're based in Canada, they probably have a lot of assets in the United States and you would probably have no trouble enforcing it against Pornhub. That's why they're complying. If it's an entity that's based out of, you know, China or, you know, whatever, some other place that we don't have the ability, they do not have assets in the United States, then essentially my guess is the AG's office is probably not going to go after that group. But the good news is Pornhub amounts to a huge portion of the pornography that's actually is accessed. And so, you know, if Pornhub gets in compliance, then that actually should limit the ability for kids to have access to it. And frankly, for them to inadvertently, I mean, that's usually what happens the first time they access it on accident, and it'll have opportunity to narrow that down some. So I don't think anybody thinks that this bill is going to make it where there is no pornography on the internet and that kids will never have the chance to access it. It's just, it is what this legislative body can do to restrict and limit it.
Follow up.
Thank you. Through the chair. So if the largest porn site like Pornhub does comply with the law, but we allow these other sites from China or other countries that have less regulation or wherever, those we aren't going to go after, then those will be the sites that will be accessible to minors. They won't have access to Pornhub anymore. They would have access to these other sites with less regulation. Is that what I'm hearing?
Representative Gray, through the chair, Bob Ballinger, Representative Vance's office. The answer is the regulation will be the same, right? So what you all are doing is you're saying, like, we don't want kids to have access to pornography. So we're going to do what we can, the same way that we don't want them to smoke cigarettes. We don't want them to drink liquor. We don't want them to gamble. A lot of other things that you put the limitations on because you feel like a kid is just not prepared to handle making those decisions. And so the regulation will be the same. The truth is there are bad actors out there that won't comply. And so we have the opportunity, if this was a drug smuggler, you know, handing out material to people illegally, we have the opportunity to cut off the largest one, right? And that may not be fair to Pornhub to use that illustration, but the point is that you have the opportunity to make it where the biggest will comply. The ones that are have an interest, that have assets, will have the opportunity to comply. The other ones won't, but hopefully we will have enough of a difference that it'll actually help some kiddos.
Thank you. Any further questions on amendment number one? Representative Carpenter, do you maintain your objection?
I remove my objection.
Any further objections? Hearing none, amendment number one has been adopted. Vice Chair Allard, my apologies before we do that. Are there any final closing comments before we consider a motion on House Bill 254? Representative Gray.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. So we talked last week when I learned that the Fifth Circuit Court had overruled the lower court's ruling to outlaw this sort of law in Texas. What we learned is that the amount Pornhub pulled out of Texas entirely once that happened. And as a result, Texans had to start downloading VPNs over the weekend. According to tech site SlashGear, searches for VPNs increased by more than 1,750% in Texas. My strong belief is that it's going to be very easy to get around this legislation, and that there is the unintended consequence of law-abiding porn sites like Pornhub being restricted, but the non-law-abiding porn sites continuing to function. And so the unintended consequence will be that minors who are looking for pornography but not, you know, able to steal their dad's driver's license or whatever to upload, to try to find a way around to do to upload it to the thing, will be accessing worse pornography than they are now. I think there's a chance that the bill could actually do some harm. So that's my comments about the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Gray. Any further comments on Vice Chair Allard?
Thank you. Just a quick closing comment. I appreciate what Representative Gray said, but my concern is if we don't pass this type of legislation, then we just say it doesn't matter. We have laws to protect us on many areas, especially with drug use. And if we just go, well, it's going to form a black market, well, we know that. When you make something illegal, a black market does arise. But I do respect your comments, Representative Gray, and it's an interesting thought. So that's it. Thank you.
Any further comments? Hearing none. Vice Chair Allard, do I have a motion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I move that the House Judiciary Committee move HB 254, version 33LS0990/S as amended. Did we amend this? From committee with the attached fiscal notes and give legislative legal permission to make any technical and conforming changes as necessary.
Object.
There has been an objection. Would the Secretary call the roll?
Representative Carpenter.
Yes.
Representative Johnson.
Yes.
Representative Sumner is not present. Representative Gray.
No.
Representative Rowe.
Yes.
Representative
Allen. Yes.
Chair
Gant. Yes. With a vote of 5 yeas and 1 nay, House Bill 254 has passed from committee. And before I make my concluding remarks, I ask that you stick around to sign the sheet. That does conclude our business for today. The House Judiciary Committee will meet again on Wednesday, March 20th at 1 p.m. to bring back H.J.R. 13, Constitutional Convention Term Limits by Representative McKay in its second hearing for public testimony and any amendments, and then bring back House Bill 107, Criminal Law Definitions by Rep. McCabe, and House Bill 358, Prohibit AI-Altered Representations by Representative Kronk. Seeing there is no other business before the committee, we will adjourn. Let the record reflect. It's 5:31 p.m.